So I think we got up to Daf Gimel Amud Beis, the two dots. The David Bepalga Delela. So if you count from the wide lines down, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 6 lines down. So it's important as a, just to refresh our memories from what we did last time. Yeah.
Taking these years still? Because in the past, a lot of people
got a chance to listen to them. Okay.
You know.
Mirtz Hashem. I'll try to take care of it. So again, the pasuk that's very important to us here is in Tilim Kuf Yutes. It's a few lines early in the Gemara, and it says Chatzos Laila Akum Lahodos Lecha Al Mishpatei Tzidkecha, which means that David used to wake up at midnight every day. So the Gemara asks the following question: V'David Depalga DeLeila Havikoi? Is it really true that David woke up at midnight? Based on that pasuk that we saw before, I can prove to you the opposite, that already at in the evening, at the beginning of the evening, he woke up.
Did he sleep?
Right, that's what we're going to get to, right? Dichsiv, as the pasuk says, also in the same kapitel of Tilim, Kidamti baneshef vashavea, that David got up at the beginning of the night and he cried out to Hashem. So the assumption of the Gemara's Kasha is that the word Neshef means the beginning of the evening, as opposed to Palga Delela, which is Chatzos, which is midnight. So when exactly did David get up? So the Gemara says, wait a minute, let's analyze the premise of your question. Umimai dahai Neshef. Ortahu, how do you know that the word Neshef means the beginning of the night, and therefore you ask a stira? So the answer is Dichsiv. We have another pasuk. This pasuk is in Mishle. B'neshef. How are you, Evan? B'neshef ba'erev yom b'ishan laila va'fela. So here in this pasuk in Mishle, as soon as you gentlemen settle down, I'll tell you where we're up to, and if you have a Gemara. But basically, this pasuk in Mishle is going to teach us that the word Neshef means the beginning of the evening. Why? Because it says B'Neshef Be'erev. Be'erev means evening. So if you have a Gemara, I'll just show you where we're up to. In the wide lines on Daf Gimel Amud Beis, if you count down about 7 lines, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So you see at the end of the 7th line, the word is B'Neshef. And this pasuk is being quoted from Mishle to prove that the word Neshef means the beginning of the night, what we would call a transition between day and night. So if that's what the word Neshef means, then David woke up at the beginning of the night. He didn't wake up at midnight. So how do we reconcile this contradiction? And the Gemara offers 3 answers to reconcile this contradiction. Later on we'll see a 4th answer. Omar Rav Oshia, Omar Rav Acha. According to Rav Oshia, Hachi Kamar, this is what David is saying. May Olam lo avar alai chatzos laila b'sheina. It never happened that I slept past midnight. In other words, even if I would sleep, I would never pass midnight.
So that resolves the contradiction that he really got up at Neshef.
Right. In other words, he got up at the beginning of the night. But there were times in which he slept a little bit. But the latest time that he ever slept is midnight. Now, I have a note here in the name of the Ein Yaakov that if he went to sleep at the beginning of the night, don't misunderstand that he went without any sleep whatsoever. But kavanasam, what it means is shaya yashen ma'at b'tchilas halayla. As at some point at the beginning of the night, he chapped a drimmel, as we say. You know, he slept a little bit. So that's the first answer. The first answer is that he would wake up earlier in the evening, And that we saw from the second pasuk, b'neshef, kidamti b'neshef ashaveya. But on the other hand, when David HaMelech says, chatzos laila akum, it means that the latest time he ever slept is midnight. Rav Zera Amar, Rav Zera has a different answer to this question. Interesting, Rav Zera was a big anav. His name was not Zera, it was Zeira. Zeira means the small one. But Chazal wanted to give him covet, so they gave him the name Zera. They changed his name. And that's what you'll see in the Otzar Gaonim. In any event, what does he say? Ad chatzos laila hoya misnamnem kisus. So Rashi explains, if you take a look at Rashi, Dibra Masa Misnam's name Kisus, Osek B'Torah Kishahoya Misnamnem. So the beginning part of the night, he was half awake, half asleep. He was in that middle state, which the Gemara compares to a sus, like a horse. Horses very often, a horse, you know, you look at it and you see it's on its feet all the time, it's half asleep. Kisus Hazesha Eino Nirdam Liolam. The horse never gets into a deep slumber. It's like half asleep, but it's always awake. So David says that in the first half of the night, up until Chatzos Laila, I'm learning Torah, Rashi says, but I'm not really focused on it. I'm not really totally awake. It's like what the Gemara calls in many places, nim velo nim, tir velo tir. You know, if you blow on him, he wakes up. But right now, he's got kind of chopping a dribble, he's asleep. And there are people that you can learn with them and they're half asleep, but they still hear you. Some people hear in their sleep, some people talk in their sleep. But mikan v'yelech, meaning what did David HaMelech mean when he says akum b'chatzos laila? It means when I hit chatzos laila, then hayim is gaber kari, then he was no longer like a horse that was half asleep, he was completely awake. Rashi doesn't tell us exactly what he was doing from Chatzos Laila when he got that extra energy force like an Ari. I would like to assume he was learning.
Did they do Tikkun Chatzos then? Like,
I don't know.
Invention, or is it
Tikkun Chatzos is relatively new, yeah. So in the next answer, the Gemara, Rav Ashi is going to tell us what happened from Chatzos Laila, and he really, David shifted his emphasis, his, you know, the theme of his learning. But here you get the impression that he continued learning even after Chatzos. But what happened at Chatzos? He had his full focus. You know, he was totally awake. Rav Ashi says that the night was split up into two. Ad Chatzos Laila, he was dedicated to the study of Torah. Again, let's just reiterate what we said before. It doesn't mean they didn't sleep at all, but whatever sleep he got, it was very minimum. And he dedicated the first half of the night, the first 6 hours of the night until midnight, to Torah. Mikan v'el, from midnight and on, right? He's got still 6 hours until he wakes up. Bishiros v'sishbachos. He shifted his theme. His focus was no longer on Torah study, but it was on shiros v'tishbachos. Now, if we go back to the pasuk says chatzos laila akum lahodos lach. He says lahodos lach means to sing the songs of and the praises of David HaMelech. Maybe at this point he composed Tehillim, Sefer Tehillim. Maybe that's what he was doing during that half of the night. So again, the first half of the night, according to Rav Ashi, David was dedicating himself to Torah study. And the second half of the night, he was dedicating himself to Shiros V'Sishbachos, correct?
There's a passage that says, Kidamti B'Neshef,
what's
the next word?
V'Eshaveya. Eshaveya meaning, and I would pray to Hashem.
Oh.
Can I ask a general question, Rav Zera?
Yeah.
When only because I haven't learned that much about that. What is the Mekor for when the Amram are having discussions about this? That Masorah, that this is the meaning of these Kufim, or
you mean these three various answers?
Yeah, like what's that? This is, they have a Masorah, that's the meaning.
I wouldn't say so. I would say that the Gemara sees two psukim that at the face of it contradict each other, and each Amora is going to make, you know, he's going to make his effort, he's going to attempt to try to reconcile these two psukim.
They're using Sfar there?
Well, again, in the third case of Ravashi, he's trying to be medayik from the pasuk. And there's no question, as we'll see later on, that David during the night was involved in Torah study. But yet the pasuk that says that David woke up says Lahodos Lach, which sounds like he was involved in giving thanks to Hashem. So that's where Ravashi makes this shift from the first half of the night to the second half of the night. Reb Zera assumes that David HaMelech spent the night learning, but the first half of the night he was kind of awake, kind of asleep. When did he wake up with full energy, totally awake? That was from midnight and on. And the first answer is just sort of a contextual or a technical answer to reconcile the two psukim. What I have here for you today is a photocopy of the Sefer called Ein Ayah, which was authored by Rav Kook, Rav Avram, Yitzchak HaKohen Kook Zatzal, who was the first chief rabbi of Palestine. And you'll see I have two different pieces that are very far from each other. If we get a chance, we'll do the first piece later on. But right now I want to focus your attention on the second piece, which you'll see on the flip side of your page. And just to identify it, on the bottom right, you'll see an arrow. Do you have that? Okay. So this is Os Yud Beis in this Sefer, which is a book written by Rav Kook to interpret the Agadita of Masechta Brachos. And he starts with our Gemara, that on the one hand the pasuk says Chatzos Laila Akum, that David testifies about himself that he wakes up at midnight. And yet on the other hand it says Kidamti Baneshef Ashavea, which means the beginning of the evening. Nire the Chatzos Laila Harishona Huzman Hamenucha Beteva. He says that Chatzos Laila at midnight, that's a kind of a natural time in which people sleep. Now it's even those who keep late hours at night, by midnight the body is exhausted and it's time to sleep. V'David HaMelech Olav HaShalom Mitzad Seichel Pu'ulosav Bizman ha-pu'ula hayarak letzorech Yisrael. When David HaMelech was energized and he wanted to actively pursue all his endeavors, he did so with a total dedication to Klal Yisrael. And he says the following, Al-Kain bochar lasos li'atzmo Rak bizman haroy leminucha. I'll explain it as I go along. I just want to get the feel of it. Alkein ikar avodaso litzorcha klal omar chatzos laila. Avol mitzad tzorech atzmo omar kidamti bineshef. So Rav Kook presents, if I understand it correctly, the following thesis. David HaMelech is dedicated to two different endeavors, one of which is more personal in terms of his own achievement, and the other is totally selfless on behalf of Klal Yisrael. And he has a choice. He's got the first half of the night and the second half of the night. In which half of the night is David HaMelech going to be in a state of half asleep and half awake? When at the end of the day, he's exhausted, but he's still pushing himself. And at which part of the night can he wake up from this state of half slumber and give it all of his energy? And that's from Chatzos Halayla and Eilech. So again, let's just review. For the first half of the night, David HaMelech is like the sus, if you remember. He's half awake and he's half asleep. And therefore, which part of his goal, you know, what David HaMelech is dedicated for, his personal achievement or for Klal Yisrael? So which one, which half of the night is he going to dedicate for which? It's like a matching question.
His personal
First call for himself.
Oh, exactly. He is so dedicated to the Tzorach HaKlal that he's going to guarantee that the first half of the night, when he's half asleep and he's half awake, he's going to use whatever limited energies he has for his own self-development, meaning his dedication to Torah. But when he gets to the second half of the night, and now he's awake, he's no longer like a sus, he's like what? A re. That is the proper time to dedicate all of his energies l'tzorech avodas haklal. And he says the following. Hinei hachilukim shebein avodos l'tzorech Yisrael bein avodos l'tzorech atzmo b'shlosha drachim. There are three differences between dedicating oneself, in this case David, to his own personal achievements, and dedicating himself to the klal. The first difference is kvius, which means the ongoing, continuous nature of the goal. Tzarche Yisrael yefshal lahafsik yom echad mi lasok b'hem. When it comes to the needs of Israel, and this is based on a pasuk in Tanakh, the needs are constant. One has to be constantly, you know, with his dukes up. You know, he can never let his guard down. As the pasuk says, "Kmo shamar kasev, lasos mishpat avdo u mishpat ama Yisrael dvar yom biyomo." When it comes to dedicating yourself to the avodah of the klal, which is called mishpat ama Yisrael, then you can't even miss a single beat, a single day. It's got to be dvar yom biyomo. It's a certain element of constancy. Mashenke mitzad avodah protis, to the extent to which I'm working on myself, you know, the times in which I have to, you know, recharge my batteries. Eino doma yom echel l'chavero. Not every day is equal to the day before it or the day after it. You know, sometimes I have to take a little bit of a break, a little bit of a vacation. Like in yeshivas, we have something called bein hazmanim. V'tochein loful mizeh bitul. And you know what? It's even possible that at some time you're going to be mevatel yourself from that dedication to your own achievements. Maybe you're not in the mood to learn, or as we said before, you have to take a break. So that's the first clue. When it comes to the Tzarkei HaKlal, there's no vacations over here, because when you're on vacation and you're not leading the people, the flock, they're in need of your guidance, it's a bad situation. Secondly, number two, Hachizuk. Now, to what extent, how much of your energy do you need? You know, the psychologists say that we use a small percentage of our horsepower, you know, in most of what we do. He says, Shebavodas HaKlal, some call Ma'ainov. He has to input all of his energies. V'lo hayu kochosov hagufonim monim oso klal. And David HaMelech found that his physical limitations, because we're all limited biologically insofar as we're human beings, they formed absolutely no limitation, no boundary or barrier to prevent or hold back David from giving it his all. However, in conscious Bavodos HaPratis, in his own personal endeavors, Hadavar Toli V'midas Kol Yom V'Shinuv, and the changes of that day. He says every day is a little different. Sometimes he had more physical capabilities and powers. Sometimes he was a little bit weaker. You know, I had a Rosh Yeshiva. His name, he's not alive anymore. His name is Rav Dov Schwarzman. I don't know if you ever heard of him. Anyway, so they used to say a legend about Rav Dov. I can't promise you it's true, but they didn't say it about me. That he would learn 40 hours and sleep 8 hours. Learn 40 hours and sleep 8 hours. But at some point the body falls apart. You know, it takes its toll. So therefore, with regard, so David, as we said it earlier, would dedicate the first half of the night to his learning, because that's his avoda pratis, his personal development and achievement, and that would allow for differences. You know, some nights he was half awake, sometimes he was three quarters awake, and so forth and so on. Vagimel, and the third distinction is ikar avodoso biada klal haisa hashiros vatishbachos. He says David HaMelech played a unique role in terms of his avoda for the klal. He would be the author of Sefer Tehillim, Shekein Heyed Bi'atzmo Posuk in Divrei Hayomim, I think, which the Gemara quotes in Masechta Ksuvos, Ne'im Zmiros Yisrael. He had to teach the people of Israel how even in dire straits, even in moments of challenge and danger, we should still sing the songs of Hashem and rely on Hashem with a great deal of bitachon. He was the great singer of Israel. Aval esek haTorah shelo hoya bavur in yono aproti. But dedication to Torah study, that fits more into his personal category as opposed to shiros v'sishbachos, which he was teaching the people. He was breaking new ground for the people of Israel.
He was composing the psalms
on behalf of Israel in the second half of the night. V'chol ma she'asek b'Torah mitzad haklal hoya kedin kedei lechonein habinyon shel zmiros Yisrael. Here Rav Kook seems to add another footnote here, which I don't understand too well, but I'll just tell you, I think what he says is that even in with regard to Torah study, there were two dimensions to David HaMelech's Torah study. One was personal. I don't want to use the word selfish because that is a pejorative connotation, but it was for himself. And then there was a Torah mitzad haklal. There was some Torah that would develop within David HaMelech the powers and the attributes, the midos, to develop the shiros v'tishbachos, the ne'im zmiros Yisrael on behalf of the tzibur. V'zu haisa midoso avur haklal. Al-Kain Pirish Kol Echad Mihani Me'amoroi Chelek Echad. He says, Rav Kook, that each one of these three Amoroim that we studied focus on a different element in the distinction between the first half of the night, the Avodah HaPratis, and the second half of the night, the Avodah L'Tzarcha Klal. So let's go through the three Amoroim. He says the following. So Rav Oshia, the first of the opinion, is going to emphasize kvius. Kvius means absolute. Absolute meaning don't miss a beat. That's called kvius. May olam lo avar alai chatzi chatzos laila v'shino. Meaning, he had to wake up at chatzos in order to dedicate himself to the klal. Never once did he sleep past chatzos. He was so careful about the kvius because this was his goal in life. This was his raison d'etre. You know, his purpose in life was to build up the tzibur, and therefore he would never wake up after chatzos. Mashay, right. So that's the first opinion. Second opinion is Rav Zeira. Rav Zeimar ad chatzos vayesik b'avodas ha-pratis, meaning he would study Torah. That's what we saw. Rashi emphasizes that he was osik b'Torah. V'ayim esnamnein kisus. Says Rav Kook, what's the analogy to a sus? Hayekoach ha-guf mis'arev bo b'tar ish prati. He says the sus is a personal possession. It's like you have your own automobile. In those days you had your own sus. You know, this was David HaMelech's sus. Masha'en kein achar kach hayu mizgaber kari. What does it mean, mizgaber kari? Lo haya kochos hachomer monim klal me'avodosel klal. The ari, the lion, represents the strongest of all animals. It has the most physical energy. And David HaMelech says, I'm like the ari from Chatzos and on. Every single ounce of physical energy, every part of my biological structure is going to be dedicated to serve the klal. And I'm like the Ari, just like the Ari in his physical state is total, he's complete, he's got all the koichos, there's nothing that stops the Ari, so too I will dedicate all my physical energies without any hold back, without any barrier, for the sake of the klal. And then we get to the third opinion. Monim is to prevent, to hold back. Rav Ashi Omar ad chatzos hayosik b'Torah zayim mitzad inyan haprati mikan ve'el shiros v'tishpachos inyan haklali k'mo shekasavnu, as the pasuk says, ne'im zmiros Yisrael. Did you enjoy this? Yeah, isn't it something? I mean, I'll tell you, I like this for two reasons. First of all, because the distinction between avodas haprat and avodas haklal And in a sense, you know, avodas haprad is important, but you don't have to dedicate, you know, if you have a choice between, you know, the iffy part of the night or the kochos and the more strong, you have to, what takes primary or, you know, what supersedes in its significance is the avodas haklal. That I thought was fascinating and a major breakthrough. But secondly, why was I fascinated by this piece? Because he literally goes through all three opinions. And each one is focused or is emphasizing another distinction, another element in the contrast between Avoda Pratis and Avoda Saklal. So I was very, again, it took me an hour to find this piece. Because you'll notice this piece is on page 8. So I went through 8 such pages until I finally came up with one piece that I thought we could learn together. I found another piece on the other side of the page, so we'll see how far we can get in the time allotted to us. And in Mirtz Hashem, you know, if we have 15 minutes or so at 12 noon, Chatzos Yom, not Chatzos Laila, so Blineder, I'd like to study that piece with you. All right. So now the Gemara analyzes the word Neshef. As we said before, the word Neshef means the beginning of the night. And David HaMelech says that he was mocked him, he got up so early that even at the beginning of the night he was already awake. So you could imagine, let's say in a long summer day, let's say night starts at 9 o'clock, you know, that's a nightfall, I'm just throwing that out as a possibility. So David is saying already at 9 o'clock I had grabbed myself a little bit of sleep, you know, I got a few minutes sleep, and I'm ready at 9 o'clock to learn Torah. I wake up from my bed and I'm learning Torah. Again, is he learning Torah with every ounce of energy? Well, that's what we saw before. So the Gemara says, I'll prove to you that ha-neshef tzafrahu. I have another pasuk in Tanakh which is going to prove that the true and accurate interpretation of the word neshef is morning. Tzafra means morning. Dichsiv, let's give a little one line background to this pasuk in Tanakh. The Amalekim attacked a city called Tzaklag, and they took over that city. It was a Jewish city. They burnt it to the ground, and they took the women and the children away. And David HaMelech fought the battle against Amalek, and the Torah describes how David HaMelech fought this battle. And the pasuk says in Shmuel Aleph, "Vayakem David mehaneshef v'ad ha'erev l'macharasam." Okay, now let's see what that means. Vayakem means that David smote. Is there such a word?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I know in the past tense it's to smite. In the present tense it's to smite. In the past tense, smote. Okay. So David smote Amalek from what time to what time? So look, it says Me'a Neshef Yad Ha'erev. So obviously these are two different periods of time. So it means from morning to evening. I prove to you therefore that Neshef means the morning. So you've been telling me, based on the Pasuk in Tehillim, that David HaMelech woke up at the beginning of the night. In fact, he woke up at the beginning of the morning, because Neshef means morning. My lav meets Safra Viad Laila. So the Gemara tries to pull a fast one. The Gemara says, "Lo, no. It doesn't mean that he fought against Amalek from day till night, but rather me'urta ad urta. He did a bagel. He did a whole 24 hours from night to night. And the word neshef is the beginning of the night." Gemara says, "That's impossible. That's real. You're really trying to pull the wool off my eyes. Yachi, if you were correct, and the word neshef means evening, is lichtov, the pasuk should have said me'a neshef." From evening to evening. Or, alternatively, me'erev ad erev. Now, obviously, the change of language here indicates that the word neshef does not mean erev, but erev and neshef are two opposite terms. Ela amar Rava, and this is going to give us a fourth answer to reconcile the stira between whether David got up at midnight or he got up at the beginning of the night. Ela amar Rava, neshef, the word neshef, Trey Nishve Havu. Okay, now I'm going to try to explain to the best of my ability what those three words mean. And I'm relying heavily on Rashi, although Rashi, frankly speaking, is very, very heavy, you know, it's very difficult to work through this Rashi. Trei Nishvei Havi. There are two Neshefs. So I'm going to try to explain it like this, Michael, and it's up to you if you want to accept what I say. I'm not 100% sure I'm right, but this is what I think it means. That the word Neshef has two different meanings. And Rashi explains why. Because the word Neshef, says Rashi, indicates a transition point. And that transition point could go in one of two directions. It could either go from day to night, or it could go from night to day. And there's a fundamental radical difference between the two. If it means from day to night, then the word Neshef really means the beginning of the night. It means, the transition means the end of day and the beginning of night. But if the word Neshef means a transition between night and day, then it means the beginning of the day. And the word Neshef is parva, so to speak. It's neutral. It can take on both meanings. Because the word Neshef itself means the transition.
Why would the Torah use a word is ambiguous?
Because I'll tell you what the word Neshef means. It's not ambiguous at all. It means, says Rashi, okay, let's see where I got to what I said, because what I just told you is Berzon chewing up Rashi. Now let's see what Rashi says, okay? I was chewing up in my own way. Rashi says, Neshef Yemama, Rashi says, Kofatz V'Ola. Now the word Kofatz means to jump. And Rashi proves from two places, a Gemara in Megillah and a Gemara in Chulin, that the word Neshef means to jump. For example, let's start with the easier one, which is the second one, the Gemara in Chulin. The Gemara in Chulin dedicates an entire perek to trephos, which means biological aberrations in an animal, which indicate that the animal is going to die. And one of them is called in Aramaic Buka di Atma de Shaf. And the word Shaf is a shortened form of the word Neshef. And Buka, my friends, is this, the hip. And what happened is the hip of the animal jumped out. Dislocated hip. And a dislocated hip in the Gemara and Chulin is a Simon Tarfus. It means the animal is going to die. Okay? And then he has a Gemara in Megillah which says, Linshof Miduchte, which means jump out of your place. And jumping out of your place again indicates that the word Neshef means to jump out. So Rashi says that the word Neshef is absolutely parva, it's neutral in terms of the transition between day and night. Because the word Neshef means I end one period and I jump into the next period.
I would pump in the definition here.
Yeah. Sure. Is this mine, by the way? I don't want to drink someone's water. If it's not yours, then it's mine.
For sure, it's like, why would you pump that definition back into the Hillel?
Where was Shmuel? I'm sorry, I'm not oriented.
Shmuel is
the pasuk in Shmuel.
Right.
Yeah,
and that seems like a thing.
Right.
And then pump that into Tehillim instead of coming up with this. It could still be the same thing. That it jumps from more.
Correct. In both cases, and that would answer Michael's question. The word nefesh means the exact same thing. It means it jumped, but the word neshef doesn't commit itself. Now you have to look into each pasuk in its context as to whether we're jumping from the end of the day into the beginning of the night. You know, it's projecting us from night to day, which would therefore mean that neshef is the beginning of the night, or we're finishing up the night and we're going to the day. So let's look at our two psukim and compare them in context. We have, as Eben pointed out, the pasuk in Shmuel. It says, "Vayakem David me'an neshef v'yad ha'erev." And since the word neshef obviously does not mean day, I'm sorry, check that. Since the word neshef obviously does not mean night, because then you're using two different words to use in the same pasuk for the same thing, that goes beyond poetic license. So the word neshef here must be day. Then what the word neshef means is the jumping off point where I leave the night and I begin the day. It means that David for the entire night was preparing the battalion for the attack against Amalek. And once day broke, that was the jumping off point from the state of preparation, if you will, sort of like the passive state, into the active state. Now we're going to go out and attack Amalek. Now let's go back to the Pasuk in Tehillim. The Pasuk in Tehillim says, Kidamti Baneshef Vashavea. So the Mefarshim explained that if the word Neshef means, as it does in Shmuel, the end of the night and the beginning of the morning, then why is David boasting, so to speak? Why is he testifying about himself that he woke up early in the morning? Well, what God will be Israel? What other great, serious individual in Israel would not do such a thing? Obviously, here he's jumping off from the day right into the night. And he's saying that even though the day was exhausting, we'll soon see that David Mel spent the entire day dedicated to Klal Yisrael as a king. But nevertheless, I jumped off the day right into the night, and I had the first opportune moment to start learning. Again, we said he had a little bit of a snooze there. You know, he's half asleep, half awake. But he was already dedicated to Esek B'Tor. So let's read Rav inside. El Amar Rava, Trei Nishvei Havu. The word Neshef means two different things in two different contexts. But again, Michael is right. It really only means one thing. But what that means in its application is really two different things. So the first pasuk is Nishaf Leila, which means he jumped off from the night into the day. In other words, he prepared his battalions, and then as soon as day broke, he jumps off and activates himself. He's ready to pounce on the enemy. The Ase Yamama, and day began. Okay. Right. I'm just taking a minute, if you don't mind, because I made myself a note here. Modu Ravish Esa Nefesh Omer Pasuk Hidarti Mesh Ein Lefarish Lomer Shehikdim Lakum Aboker. Oh, he's quoting the Nitziv. The Nitziv says that even though Rava claims that the word Neshef, as we saw in Shmuel, means the end of the night and the beginning of the day, it doesn't mean so in Tehillim. In the pasuk that David says, Kidamti Baneshef, I got up in the Nefesh, doesn't mean at the end of the night and the beginning of the day. Why? Shem Kain Ein Chidush B'Dava. The Ein B'Kach Maila Shal David Al Shar B'Nei Adam. In other words, other people also wake up early. I don't know, but probably you and I could all testify about many people that we know that wake up very early in the morning.
It could just mean to jump. And I got up with a jump and started to do things. And it might
right.
not even actually
and that's mean, exactly what it means. But when did he get up? In the day or the night?
We don't know.
So that's what we're saying here, and that's what the Tziv is working out, that it all depends on its context. If you're saying he jumped and he got into action in the case of spending the night preparing his battalion for battle and he waited for daybreak for battle, then it means, Neshef means the jumping off point to the morning. Mm-hmm. If on the other hand you're saying he jumped out of bed to get up, then you're talking at the beginning of the night. Why, says the Nitziv? Because if it means he jumped out of bed to start the morning, yeah, he says that that's no big deal. That's not a chiddush. Everyone gets up in the morning.
The action he's doing, he's talking about the transition period from day and night to night and day. Right,
right. No, but I'm just trying to emphasize what the word kfitza means. You know, that kfitza means that there was a certain jump and he projects himself into the next time zone.
So it's not
rushing in. He's anxious to do.
So he's rushing, like he's giving us the lesson that we should be rushing to do it.
Right, right. Exactly. And in this case, it's Talmud Torah. So the daytime, he was dedicated to all sorts of kingly duties. And now he jumps off the day. It's nighttime. Nobody expects me to sit on the throne now. I'm in the base medrash and I'm steiging away. Yeah. And that's where Dovid becomes the paradigm for Zriza Makdimim LeMitzvahs, you know, that we should do our mitzvahs with enthusiasm. So he says, I'm just going to read you the note here. He says, Miusheves, according to Rava, Miusheves Hastira Baksuvim, Shachei Neshef Lefamim, refers to Erev, like for example, B'Neshef B'Erev Yom, and Lefamim Pirusho Boker, Vayakem David Mea Neshef Viad Ha'erev.
So what is obviously Omar Rava, there are two Neshef, and then what does he say? Neshef Laila Vasi Yamama, Neshef Yamama.
Neshef Laila Vasi Yamama, Neshef Yamama Vasi Laila. In other words, Neshef could either mean he jumped out of the night and he jumped into the day, Or he noshaf yimama, the day ended, and then he jumps into the night, so to speak. The night begins. Okay. Now the Gemara asks a very strange question. So David woke up at midnight, the Pasuk says. Again, we had different interpretations what that means. The David miyaviyada palga de leila emas. How could David testify about himself that he woke up at midnight? How did he know when midnight was? Oh, excellent. Maybe the dogs were barking. That's a good point. But one thing is clear, he didn't have a watch, and it's pitch black out. So the Gemara offers a
somebody's come awakened.
Yeah, but how did that person know exactly it was midnight? Meaning, the Gemara is now going to prove that the Chacham Mikolod, the brightest individual that we have, according to most of the that's Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, Shlomo Melch had a different kind of Chachma, but even Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know when Chatzos Laila is. Hashta, now I'll prove, Hashta always introduces a Kalvachomer, right? Hashta, Moshe Rabbeinu lo avi yada, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know when is Chatzos, and I'll prove it to you. The Chsiv, the Pasuk says that Moshe wants Paro. Ko amar Hashem, I'm adding a few words to the Pasuk. Kachatzos halayla ani yotze betoch Mitzrayim. And the end of the Pasuk is, Umeis kol bechar b'eretz Mitzrayim. And why does Moshe Rabbeinu use the Chaf HaDimyon? Kachatzos. What did HaKadosh Baruch Hu say? Kachatzos, which means, you know, around Chatzos? Approximate? Correct? So that whole spiel is right here, Michael.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's where, this is where it comes from. You know, we're too smart. That's the thing.
Why did Moshe change the language?
So why did Moshe change the language? My kachatzos, what does it mean, be'erach, you know, approximately, like you say here, modern Hebrew, be'erach, I'll meet you be'erach at 5, you know, and you're lucky if you get there at 6, right? He says, ilei medom alei akud shebrichu, kachatzos. If you want to presume that Moshe Rabbeinu was simply transmitting exactly what he heard from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, literally, and God had told him kachatzos, oh no, that's impossible. I can't buy into that. Mi ika sfeika kamishmaya? Would God have the need to add the word approximate? You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides that Makas Bechoros is going to begin at night, right? At midnight, excuse me. And that's exactly when it would begin. Ela, but rather we have to assume Amar Lei, meaning God told Moshe Rabbeinu Bachatzos. Again, there's no such pasuk, but the Gemara logically concludes that Hashem says Bachatzos. I'm going to go out to destroy Kol Bechor Mitzrayim Bachatzos exactly punkt, as we say in Yiddish, at 12 midnight. The Asa Iu, and Moshe Rabbeinu had to water it down a little bit. The Amar Kachatzos, because Moshe Rabbeinu could not tell Paro exactly when Chatzos was. And therefore he had to fudge it a little bit by changing the bays to a chaf. Alma, you see clearly, Misafkale, that there's an absolute doubt, you know, you can't be certain exactly when Chatzos is. Again, maybe therefore that night the dogs were quiet. I don't know. But that's not going to help us for our Gemara.
I'm just saying, we said a simon before.
It was Klavim talking.
All the dogs bark at 1 second. I mean, they're barking, I don't know, let's say
right.
4 or 10 minutes after.
On that night, I have no cash, because maybe the dogs were silent. Do you remember? Well, yeah, it's Kelev Lashon, as Moses says. Yeah. And that's why they got paid. And they got the novella, right? Like Kelev Tashlichen also. Did David have yada? And David knew? How could that be? So here in the footnote, he quotes the Rambam in the third chelik of Mor Nevuchim, who says that Moshe Rabbeinu haya chacham mikol adam, v'haya chacham afilu yoser mishlomo ha-melech. And this is based on a Gemara Rosh Hashanah Chaf Aleph. Is therefore the Gemara says, if Moshe Rabbeinu haya chacham mikol adam, lo yada mosai chatzos, he couldn't determine exactly when his chatzos. Is Eich Yoda Zos David Shaloya Chacham Kemoso? David was not as brilliant, as all knowledgeable as Moshe Rabbeinu. Fine. So this is the famous Gemara about Kinar David. I don't know if you're familiar, in the old city there's a restaurant called Kinar David, but the word Kinar David, which means David's harp, is all over the place. You know, you walk into my Rav, I don't know if you've ever heard of it, it's a high school here in Israel. You're not familiar with it? It's Rabbi Chait's yeshiva. Anyway, you walk into my Rav and all over the place you'll see in various artistic designs, Kinar David. You know, that's the theme. Because that's a yeshiva that's very heavy into singing. They sing all of Tehillim and everything. It's a... When I was a kid, there was a group called... The Rabbi's Sons. I don't know if you ever heard of it. You never heard of it, but I promise you, you know their songs because they're so much a part of our culture. So one of the Rabbi's Sons was Baruch Chait, who's the Rosh Hashiva of my Rav. So they were into singing.
Before the Miami Boys Choir.
I don't know how old the Miami Boys Choir. They've been around for a while too. So the Gemara says, David simana havile. David has had his own way of knowing exactly when. Chatzos Lailati. Omar of Acha Bar Bizna. Omar of Shimon Chasida. Chasida means he was a chassid. Kinar Hayatovid Lemat Hayatolu Lemala Mitaso Shel David. There was a harp that was hanging above the bed of David HaMelech. I was so disappointed I didn't find anything here in the Sefer on this. I thought he would have like 10 pages on this Haggadah. The Kavan Shehigia Chatzos Laila Baruach Tzfonis is a whole long discussion here about how the Gemara knew, how Rav Acha Bar Bizna knew that it was Ruach Tzfonis. There are four types of winds. This is the northern wind. The northern wind is very challenging when we have to really fight against certain powers that exist in the world. He says, V'kevon she'igia chatzos laila bar ruach tzfonis v'no sheves bo. Now, the harp, I guess, had certain openings, and you blew into the openings to make beautiful music, but if a very strong wind comes, that wind could actually cause blowing of the harp, and that blowing of the harp told David HaMelech that it was exactly midnight.
And this Norman blew exactly midnight.
At midnight, which is this whole discussion. I'm going to try to, you know, again, if we have time, I'm going to try to go through the four different winds and where they come and how they're related to different astronomical phenomena and why the Gemara knows that the Ruach Tzfonis comes exactly at midnight.
These are only winds in Rosh Hashanah.
I think it's all over the world, if I'm not mistaken. I didn't see anyone who said that it was only in Yerushalayim. Hmm. All right?
But it's in the northern hemisphere, nevertheless, right?
Ah, you mean you're asking... No. Oh, I see what you're saying. You're asking how midnight is something that shifts depending upon where you are on the globe. Is that what you're asking?
Yes, but then presumably the winds would shift with it. I mean, as midnight moves, the wind will move with it, if that's what you're saying.
So miyad haya omed, as soon as the Ruach Tzfonis started blowing the kinar, David would immediately wake up. The Osek Batorah, and this is the source that we had. You know, this proves that what we discussed before about David HaMelech waking up is Osek Batorah.
I thought it was
Osek
Batorah.
The first half, right. But so remember we said that there were different types of Torah. There's Torah Sheesh Bo Tishbachos,
exactly.
And then there's really Torah. So here I think he's referring to the Torah of Shiros V'Tishbachos. In fact, the Gemara is going to say later on that David HaMelech prays to Hashem that he should count the Torah of Shiros V'Tishbachos as if he learned, you know, Negayim and Taras, you know, the heaviest, most profound sugyas. Until 6 hours later when day began. Oh, now the Gemara goes through a whole discussion. What happened with daybreak? They came into David HaMelech. Amrulo, Adonenu HaMelech. It's time for your kingly responsibilities. Amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Parnosa. Rashi explains, Amcha Yisrael Tzrichim Parnosa means that there are aniyim in Klal Yisrael and there are very dire straits. As king, you have to make sure to create some sort of financial arrangement that the people don't starve. That's your responsibility. Amar Lehem, David wasn't so excited about this. He says, you're coming to me. Okay, so here's a long discussion which I want to share with you. It's based on Midrashim. Okay, I'm reading from the footnote. Chachmei Yisrael were very concerned about the needs of the tzibur, and they were worried particularly about the aniyim. The alkein heim ponu leDavid Amelch binyani parnasas amo. So he quotes the Yaros Dvash. His name was Rabbi Yonasan Eibeshitz, and he says the following: why were they asking David HaMelech? And the answer is that the Medrash tells us that, believe it or not, David HaMelech had vast treasures. And this began in David's career at the moment that he killed Goliath, HaPlishti, because the Yalkut says that at that moment, people started showering to express their gratitude to David, because that action really saved them from the Plishtim. They showered him with Kesef and Zov. And David HaMelech was so eager, this was his goal in life, to build the Beis HaMikdash. Unfortunately, it's like those who have career plans that never materialize. So he Hifrisham Litzorech Binyan Beis HaMikdash. David locked up these treasures for the purpose of building the Beis HaMikdash. He didn't want to share them with anyone. The Kasher Haya Ra'av Ba'aretz, when there was difficult financial situation in the land, Bikshu Mimenu Sheyitnu Me'otzos Elu, open up these treasures, share with us the Kesef and the Zav, V'lo Hiskim. But David was so focused on the Binyan Beis HaMikdash that he didn't want to live up. And according to the Medrash, Hashem was not happy with this. You know, it's good to be excited about building a Mikdash, and I know you want to be the one to do it, David, but still, you have responsibility to the Aniyim. The Omar Lo, and God says to David HaMelech, again, according to this version, it's not going to be reflected in our sugya, but according to the version of the Medrash in Rus, it's actually a Yalkut in Rus, Biglal Zelo Bona David is based on Mikdash. Again, it doesn't mean that there weren't other reasons. There were many, many reasons why David HaMelech couldn't build the Beis HaMikdash. But one of them was that he was eager to build the Beis HaMikdash on the at the expense of the Ani. Again, that's one medrash.
I saw a connection with that. They say that the reason wasn't able to build because he had blood on his hands. So instead of using these resources and being the Ani, he went out to war, which is more.
Blood.
Just with blood on his hands. Right. It's all connected.
Yeah.
He got the resources because he had blood on his hands. Wasn't Zochet to,
right. To build a base on
it.
Was
clean money. In a roundabout way.
So now there's a four-word response here of David, which I'm not sure. I have two possibilities, and I want you to help me figure out which one is correct. Amalem, David says the following, quote, L'chu v'sparnesu zeh mizeh.
Go and do it yourselves.
Oh, go and do it yourself. So I had two pshatim here, and I would like you to tell me which one you think is correct. Maybe there's a third pshat, but I wanted to offer one or two pshatim. Hisparnesu zeh mizeh means that there should be an influx of marketing, so to speak, of economic activity. You know, not influx, what's the word I'm looking for? To upgrade or to intensify the economic trading, right? If there's a lot of trading going on, if there's a lot of buying and selling, then the entire economy will be in healthier straits, and by improving the economy, ultimately this is filtered down even to the Aniyim.
He was a supporter of Reagan, King
David. Right, right. Yeah. He was a capitalist, right? Yeah. He was a Republican, not a Democrat, right? But the other way of interpreting is his parnasu zemis, that means he was a Democrat, meaning what he really wanted to say was that the Ashirim have enough money, don't come to me. You should squeeze money out of the Ashirim. So let's say the Ani had 100 and the Asher had 1,000. So why don't you create a little bit more of a balance here? You know, take 100 from the Ashirim and give it up to the Aniim. And by the way, there's Allah in Shulchan Aruch, I saw it in Yoridea, of Kofen al Hatzdaka, that the Bezdin, the courts have a right to force a person to give tzedakah. So if the Aniyim are really in such bad shape, then we should pump the Ashirim. My Rebbe used to always say that what's the purpose of a rabbi? So people think the purpose of hiring a rabbi is to paskin shilas. Again, I'm going back 100 years in Europe. He says, nay, that's secondary. The most important job of a rabbi is to make sure that the ashirim are sharing their money with the aniyim. That's what he used to say. Maybe this was his source.
The rabbi was always poor.
Yeah, that's true too. Right. Which reminds me, like, I still owe you something. Okay, we'll talk about that later. Amru lo. So the Chachamim said. Now it's very interesting. What we're going to see here is a very famous mashal. Actually, two mashalim, and basically the Chachma Yisrael. You know the word in Yiddish, Edelkeit. You know they didn't want to attack David HaMelech head on. You know, in a very very direct way. So they gave a remez. Right, I'm gonna give you a mashal. They said. So the first mashal is Ein HaKometz Masbia Es Hari. Kometz means a handful. You know, when you want to indicate that all you have to eat, you know, you have one half a bushel of grains, you know, that you can take in one hand, that's called a kometz. Like in Menachos, right, you have kmitza. And that amount is not enough to satiate the lion. The lion is too hungry. You know, lions eat meat, you know, give them meat and they'll eat meat. So there's not enough funds to go around to satiate, to satisfy the needs of the aniyim. That was the first mashal. Ve'ein abor, here's the second mashal. And on this second mashal, there's so much literature. There's so many different variations of how to interpret this mashal. But ve'ein abor mismale michulyoso. Rashi, I'll give you Rashi's pshat here. Rashi says that if you take out a piece of afar, like a clump of dirt from a bar, from a ditch, and then you throw it back in, it won't be enough to fill up the bar. Here too, you know, if you're working within the bar, meaning if your funds are coming within the system itself, you're just shifting around the money, then we won't be able to fund the aniyim.
What does chulyoso actually mean?
Chulyoso means a part of the pieces of the bar. A chulyo is always like if you have a puzzle, each part of the puzzle is called a chulyo. For example, in the spinal column, each vertebrae is called a chulyo. A chulyo means a part of a whole. So let's say the bar, if you go inside the bar, you will see many different parts of the bar. Each part is, the inner part of the bar is called a chulyo. You take out one of those chulyos and throw it back into the bar, that's not going to fill it up. Meaning, what we need to do is we have to stretch our arm out of the system. And that's why David HaMelech is going to tell them, you know, to vanquish the enemies and go out to battle.
They're telling him, you provide some money. Don't rely on us to just regenerate.
Correct. According to the Medrash that we saw before, we can't generate enough money from within the system to solve the problem.
Cut taxes and give people more money to.
And Rashi, if you take a look at Rashi's language, he says, "Im ein atome chin laniim shebanu then amongst us." Mizonos mi makom acher. This is the end of the Rashi. Dibur maskel ein abor. He says, "Ein anu yecholim lefarnesam mishal atzmein." From within the system, within the economic sphere of our nation, we don't have the funds to do this. So the Marshal wants to know why the Chachamim needed two different mishalim. And I want to share with you his chiddush. I think it's brilliant. Ma hutzruchu l'shnei mishalim. He says the following. Kavanas David HaMelech ha'isa shaniyim yitlu tztok me'ashirim. David's intention was, let's take the money from the rich and give it to the poor. U'bederach klal, as a general rule, haniyim, this is what David was thinking, mistapkim b'muot. In other words, let's say from 1,000 that the ashirim have, If each usher from his 1,000 he could fork over 100, so again 100 doesn't make you rich. It's only 10%, but it's enough. You know, if you want to just put bread on the table, it should be enough. Im kein, therefore David thought, taspik lehem osat tztaka, it should be enough. Al kein heishivlo ena komitz masbiyas ari. He says yesh aniim This is the Marsha. She'ein dai lehem b'davar mu'at. They're used to a high standard of living. And if you just give them a pittance and say, we'll take this and buy a pita in the store down the road, that's not going to satiate them. Elohim tzrichim mosaros. They also want to live a life of luxury. Now, again, in Hilchus Tzedakah, you have to know whether or not that's a valid claim. And the Gemara has a certain category, which I don't know if we'll discuss it now, but it's called Sus Lirkov Love, that a person gets used to a certain standard, and then if they lose their money, we're obligated to bring them back up to what they used to. And he says, therefore the Moshe was an Ari. The Ari, you can give him enough to get by, and he'll survive, but he's not happy with that. The Ari has an appetite. Vosifu, now we get to the second Moshe. The Im Tomas, I love this here, between the first answer and the second answer. Shashirim Yitnu Anim Harbe. Instead of the Ashirim giving 100, you know, what we call Miser, if they have 1,000, let him give 500 or 400 if the Oni has 100, so we'll have 500. He says, Ad She Yaspik Lem Gam Lemosros. Now the Anim have enough not only to put food on the table, to buy a beautiful apartment. In Cain, Ein Habar Mismali Michul Yoso. Shemasha Mismali Mitzad Ze. Nechzar Mitzad Ze. He says that you're taking away too much from the Ashirim. The Ashirim don't have 1,000,000. You know, if they were millionaires, you could do such a thing. A millionaire could write a check for 1,000, then it doesn't make a dent in his bank account. But we're not talking about mega, you know, these mega shirim, I mean, these, what do they call them, the billionaires. You know, we're talking about rich guys, meaning relative to the aniyim, they're wealthy. But they don't have that much. For the ashirim to supply enough to the aniyim, such that the aniyim could even enjoy the mosros and be satiated, is you're being memale the bar mitzad zeh, but nechzar mitzad acher. You imagine if you just shifted the soil from one side of the bar to the other, but you'd be digging into this side. So at the end of the day, you haven't really accomplished anything. The bar is still a bar, and you haven't filled up the bar. I thought this was very brilliant because he's adding an entire piece into the Gemara that we don't have. So what does David HaMelech tell them at the end of the day? Amar lehem lechu upishtu yedechem bigdud, which means go out to battle. And once you go out to battle and you vanquish your enemies, you will take booty with you, and that booty will supply the aniyim with the monies, the funds that they need. Lifshot means to stretch out. Stretch out your arm in battle. That's an idiomatic phrase. Gedud means battle. Or legion is a gedud. Now, we in halacha, we have two types of milchama. You remember that? Milchamas mitzvah, milchamas rishus. So this would be a classical case of milchamas rishus. Meaning, we're not destroying our enemy because they fit into the category of the seven nations that occupy Israel. As far as David HaMelech is concerned, and we're not destroying the enemies or Amalek. As far as David is concerned, go out there and take over Syria. As long as you can come back with funds. So this was David HaMelech's decision to go out in a Milchemes Rishus. Now when it comes to Milchemes Rishus, the Gemara points out that there's an entire sequence that has to take place, we'll call it a prerequisite, before you go out to Milchemes Rishus.
And you're not guaranteed to win either.
So that's one of the three requirements, that you have to know that you're guaranteed to win. Of course, you and I, Michael, would ask, how do you know that you're guaranteed to win? So that's the next line in the Gemara. Niyad. Now we're going to go through three stages, and the Gemara's going to make a big deal. It's got to be in that sequence. Number one is Yoatzim Bachitofel. And that means that we need a period of time of preparation. And the person who was considered at that time in David HaMelech's generation as the military expert was Achitofel. He was the military genius. He would tell you everything you had to know. He would tell you how many people you have to leave back in the city that shouldn't go out to battle. They would protect the home front. And how many people would go out to attack the other front, and how many people would be needed to take away the booty, and which side we should go into, and all the intricacies. So that now, after a period, I'm going to just throw out a number here, this is just totally artificial, but let's say it's 6 months. So from the moment that we went to Achitofel until the moment we're ready for battle takes 6 months of preparation. Now we have to get license. Now we have to get the okay to go out. And for that we nimlachim b'sanhedrin. The halacha is that if you're going out to a melchemes rishus, you need the okay of Sanhedrin. Melech is not enough. So Melech makes the decision. They prepare for battle, military scheming. That's through Achitofel. And finally, they need to get the green light because it's a melchemes rishus. Who's going to give them the green light? Sanhedrin. And this is all codified by the Rambam in Hilchus Melchama, Hilchus Melachim.
No, the second, that's the second one. Third one, the third one.
Oh, and what's the third one? It's not enough that the Sanhedrin says you're allowed to go out to battle. You've got to be convinced that the chances are that you're going to win this war. How do you know you're going to win this war? For that, Achitofel is not enough. For that, Sanhedrin is not enough. And finally, we need Visholim v'Urim v'Tumim. And Rashi explains that the Urim v'Tumim are going to tell us that this is going to be a successful battle. So there are three different elements here that contribute till finally we can go out to battle. And the next sugya in the Gemara, which is a very long, complicated sugya, which we won't do today, is the Gemara is going to try to prove that we need A, we need B, we need C, and in that particular sequence.
The Rav mentioned there might be a time period of preparation.
Right.
Maybe as a king, I don't want to even prepare anybody if I already know the Sanhedrin's not going to say yes, or the Urban is not going to say yes. Or are you saying that the only way they're going to say yes is if they prepare?
Exactly. So I'll tell you what it is. Again, this is going to be my Shia for Monday, for Tuesday, whenever we get together again, so don't get bored with me on Tuesday. But the Mefarshim are going to say the following, that the advice, I don't know what word to use, of the Urim V'Tumim is very limited in time. It has a very short expiration date, deadline. Why? Because it all depends on the ruchnius, on the spiritual state of Klal Yisrael, and it changes the flux. So from the time of the Urim V'Tumim, we got
to
go out to battle immediately, and therefore all the preparation has to take place before. Okay then? So we'll say we'll take a 5-minute break, and anyone who wants to learn a little bit of hashkafa on the parsha, so we'll do that in 5 minutes.
Are we going to carry on this on Sunday or on Tuesday?
This is on Tuesday and Thursday.
Tuesday, Thursday.
Sunday I give a shia for the kolil. You're always invited. It's in we're learning Shabbos. And then after that I go over to a company called Glide, which is in the Gan Technologi next to Malcha, and we have four of our guys from this community who work for that company called Glide, and I give a lunch and learn. So that takes place on Sunday. Now, Sunday I have a very hectic schedule, you know. Lunch and learn, yes. I have to tell you, they put me in an office. Baruch Hashem, I don't fall asleep in the middle of the shiur because it's so comfortable. I'm telling you, the chair they give me, you know, this happened to me also in Canada.
Oh, yeah.
I gave a lunch and learn series in Zeifman's, which is an accounting firm. They put me in this chair that swirls around, it goes upside down, inside out. You know, I had to force myself to wake up, you know, like David Avelov says, that Chatzos Lila, he finally got it to his act together, he was his kavri.